28. They were presently airborne. The Flapple, in the night's darkness, headed northwest toward the Cheyenne hotspot, with only the two men aboard. All leadys, both Adams's and Lantano's, had been left behind to dig. Adams wondered if they had begun to scrap yet, if the fracas that was latent between the two factions had broken out overtly. Probably so. To reopen the vertical tunnel to the Tom Mix tank proved a major problem. It was not until dawn that the two of them at last managed, with equipment brought from Adams's domain on the Pacific coast, to cut away the hard, fused crust which Lantano's two leadys had installed as a barrier to further use of the shaft. Nicholas and Adams had been lucky to find the spot at all. However, the thoroughness of the leadys' job had assisted them. The spot had been conspicuous, even at night, by its temporary barrenness, by the smooth and lifeless artificial surface, an almost obsidian-like disfiguration among the tufted weeds and rubble. Now the entrance once again gaped. The professional work of the no longer extant leadys had been undone, but it had taken hours. Setting it on auto, Joseph Adams dispatched the Flapple. It rose, disappeared into the gray, early morning light. Left here, it would have acted as a clear giveaway. And the problem still remained of resealing the tunnel's entrance after them in such a manner that it would not even with instruments be detected. For this purpose, he and Adams had composed a plug. A section of hard dirt, weed-covered, sheared to fit the tunnel mouth exactly. This, in actuality, was relatively a simple aspect of the job. He and Adams now squeezed down into the tunnel, and then, by means of a series of small link chains, attached to steel stakes driven into the underside of the plug, they dragged the piece of hard earth and weeds after them and over them. All at once, the gray light of morning vanished, and they had only their lanterns. By pulling the chains taut, they wedged the plug securely in place. And then, with great care, they detached all metal pieces from the plug, the stakes and chains. Detectors used later on would have registered the presence of the metal. That would have been the tropism that would have distinguished their trail of escape for the hounds who would one day be coming. 5 minutes later, Nicholas, with his boots, kicked loose the seal at the base of the tunnel. The tank's committee of activists, acting under Jorgensen's expert direction, had carefully made the seal susceptible to easy removal from above. After all, if Nicholas returned, with or without the Artiforg, he would have to come by this route. Squeezed into the small storeroom of Floor 1, the entire leadership of the committee, Holler and Flanders and Jorgensen, all of them waited with their strange little handmade laser pistols, which they had turned out in the ant tank's shops.
"We've been listening to you for an hour," Jorgensen said, "banging and rattling around up there, reopening the tunnel. Naturally, we have a full-time alarm system rigged. It woke us at exactly 4 a.m. How did you make out?"
He saw then, in Nicholas's hands, the aluminum cylinder.
"He got it,"
Holler said. Nicholas said, "I got it." He handed the cylinder to Jorgensen, turned then to help Adams out of the tunnel and into the crowded storeroom.
"What about Dale Nunes? Did he file a report up to—"
"Nunes," Jorgensen said, "is dead. An industrial accident in the bottom floor shops. He was, you know, exhorting us to greater productivity, and he got too near a power cable. And for some reason, I forget now. But anyhow, the cable wasn't properly shielded."
Holler said, "And some oaf pushed Nunes backwards so that he fell onto the cable, and it wiped him out," he added.
"We already buried him. It was either that or have him report to up above on your absence." "And in your name," Jorgensen said, "like you were still here, we sent an official report to the surface, to Estes Park, asking for another POLCOM to replace Commissioner Nunes, and of course, expressing our regrets."
There was silence. Nicholas said, "I'll take the Artifork to Carol." And then, he said to them all, "I didn't bring this back so we could make our quota. I brought it for Sousa's sake, as such. For his life. But the quota is over."
"How come?" Jorgensen said, perceptively. "What is it up there?"
He saw Adams then, realized all at once that Nicholas had not returned alone.
"Who's this? You better explain."
Nicholas said,
I will when the mood strikes me.
He's still president of the tank, Flanders reminded Jorgensen. He can wait as long as he wants. Christ's sake, he brought the pancreas. I mean, does he have to deliver a speech in addition?
I was just curious,
Jorgensen, backing down, said lamely.
Where's Carol? Nicholas said, as with Joseph Adams, he passed through the gang of committee members toward the door of the storeroom. He reached the door, took hold of the knob. The door was locked.
Jorgensen said,
We can't leave here, Mr. President. None of us.
Who says so?
Nicholas said after a pause.
Carol herself, Holler said. Because of you. The bag plague, or the stink of shrink, or any other bacterial contamination that you...
He gestured at Adams.
And this fellow may have on you. And we're all of us stuck here, too, because we said, Christ, we gotta be at the bottom of the tunnel. In case it isn't Nick that we heard that set off the alarm. And if it was...
He hesitated.
Well, we felt we ought to be here to sort of, you know, officially be on hand to greet you.
He glanced down in embarrassment.
Even if you didn't have the artiforge, because, after all, you tried.
You risked your life,
Jorgensen said in agreement. Nicholas said acidly,
Under the threat of being blown up by you shop boys, and my wife and brother along with me.
Maybe so, Jorgensen said, but you did go, and you got it, so you didn't just poke your head out and slide back down again and say, Sorry, fellas, no luck, as you could have done. Hell, we couldn't have disproved it. Proved you hadn't tried.
They all seemed embarrassed now. Guilty, Nicholas thought. That was more it. Ashamed of the terror tactic they had used to get him to go. Now, he realized, their president has returned, with the artiforge. Old Maury Souza will be revived, restored to his position. Our production of leadies will resume, and we will meet our quotas. Except that their ant-tank president knows the truth now, which he did not when he originally left, climbed the tunnel, emerged on Earth's surface, to learn what Commissioner Dale Nunes had known all the time. No wonder Nunes had insisted everyone act solely through channels, that is, through Nunes. Make no direct contact with the world above. No wonder a POLCOM in each tank was essential. It had always been obvious that the POLCOM performed a vital function for somebody, presumably for the Estes Park government, but only by journeying to the surface himself and coming back here again had he seen just how vital and for whose benefit that function had been.
Okay, Nicholas said to the committee. He let go of the doorknob, gave up. And what did Carol intend next? A decontamination process of some sort? To side bacteria, microbes, and viruses, which he knew to be non-existent. It was a temptation to tell them now, but he refrained. The time, he knew, it has to be exactly right. This must not be mishandled, because if it is, there will be too great a reaction, too much justified anger. They will burst up through the large chute, the leady chutes, break out carrying their handmade laser pistols, and the veteran, expert leadies will massacre them as they emerge. And for us, it will be over.
Jorgensen said, We've already notified Carol by intercom that it is you. She ought to be here any second. Be patient. Souza's deep in the freeze. He can wait another hour. She'll graft in the pancreas sometime around midday. Meanwhile, we're all supposed to take off all our clothes, pile them up, then outside the door there's this chamber we built down in the shops. We'll pass through it, naked, one by one, and jets aside of different types will...
To Nicholas, Adams said, I just never realized how completely they accepted. It's incredible. He seemed dazed. We thought of it, I guess, as an intellectual acceptance. But this...
He gestured.
All the way, Nicholas said, nodding. In every emotional level, down to the basic phobic animal level, to the very deepest layer. He began to remove his clothes, resignedly, until the time arrived to tell them there was no choice. The ritual had to be gone through. At last, as if prodded by a remote reflex of some dim, uncertain source, Adams, too, began unbuttoning his shirt.